What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Financially Free Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast with your host, Megan, for the Friday episodes. And I have Travis with me today. We are going to be chatting about, oh, by the way, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. It is Friday, Valentine's Day.
What's up, everybody?
Just wanted to have some fun.
I didn't tell Travis at all what we're going to be talking about today. So he's in the dark, and I think we're going to get some pretty raw, good answers from him on swipe right or left, the love and money edition. So do you know what swipe left means or swipe right with Bumble or Tinder or those dating apps?
It's been a few years since I've had to worry about that as a, happily married man. But yeah, I think left is bad and right is good, right?
Correct. Yes. And okay. You didn't meet Christine online. Y'all met through church or through like a program, right?
We met at church. Yeah.
That's right.
When you say met through a program, it sounds like we were both in AA together or something.
Sorry. I was going to say church and then I said program. I don't know why I said that.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it would be okay if we met there. I'm sure a lot of people meet there. It's a good place to meet people, you know, go through similar challenges. No, I mean, yeah, we met in the 1930s, something like, 20 or 30% of people like met that way. And I think nowadays it's just like 2% because everybody meets online, you know?
I feel like there's a shift though. There's a shift where everyone's like swearing off dating app and trying to meet the natural way, the good old, natural way, which is in person. But I met Kelly on Bumble, my husband.
Yeah.
Even though we went to all the same schools growing up, we didn't know each other. We weren't in the same circles. And so we are a success story. But I know a lot of folks who did meet on the apps, on the Bumbles, on the Tinders, on all the, whatever they are, Hinge. I think my sister met her husband on Hinge.
Yeah.
But we're going to apply that, swiping right, swiping left. Right would be, we like that. We love that. Left is going to be, nope, not interested, not, no for me. And we're going to apply that to money and have a little bit of a love kind of theme since it's Valentine's Day. So I've got some financial misconceptions that I want us to like quickly go through, swipe right or swipe left on. I'll kind of read them out to get what your thoughts are on that common money myth or that common money misconception. And we could chat about it for a little bit, but these are meant to be quick. Are you ready for that?
All right. So right, good. You're saying left is bad?
Yep. And if you want to elaborate, you can. All right. So let's kick things off. You shouldn't talk about money in the early stages of dating. Left or right?
Swipe left.
Yeah.
I mean, that's loaded. But I think that money is not that important, really, in terms of whether or not somebody matches your values, your dream for your life, like your life goals. Mm-hmm. Like I would think of money habits and spending as like something that is somewhat changeable, whereas a lot of things are not changeable. Like a lot of things about somebody is that's set in stone. If you take it or you leave it. But I feel like money stuff is very much like built off of like family history and experience and like people change their finances around all the time. So I would say that wouldn't be good to swipe left on. So left, I disagree with it. Yeah.
Gotcha. Interestingly, so when Kelly and I first met, we were both unemployed. I had just left my first firm that I ever worked at for financial planning unexpectedly. I didn't think I was going to be leaving that early. And then he had just left his company to start his own business. And so he didn't tell me on Bumble that he was unemployed, and I didn't tell him that I was unemployed like before we met, but we ended up meeting, and then he literally sat me down within the first couple sentences and was like, I just need to tell you, like, I was employed, but I am not right now. The joke was kind of funny because both of us were unemployed, so the joke was, who's going to pay for our drinks tonight? But just kidding.
Well, like, y'all had tons of time to spend together then, right? Like, you'd be like, hey, we'll hang out all day. I don't know anywhere else to be.
And I told Sim this before, but a really attractive thing about him that I found out that night was that he had saved like a really big emergency fund or a really big fund to be able to bridge the gap between like leaving his company and starting his own. And I was like, you're talking to me about emergency savings? What? Love it. So we did talk about money very early in the early stages of dating, but more about situational. I do agree with you that like behaviors can be changed or coached, and like money situations do evolve over time. Next up, high income professionals don't need to worry about budgeting. Left for if you disagree, and right if you think that's a good quote.
I'm going to swipe right on this.
Yeah.
I think it depends. In any high income professional situation that I've seen, usually when there's a problem, it's housing or car related. So I almost never see something where somebody's struggling to meet their financial goals where it's not housing or car related. So the real rule that really does work is, like, if you're careful about your housing and car expenses, everything else just falls into line. I mean, I cannot go to the bakery and eat more than a couple things there. Like, I literally go there and, like, even if I want to, and I see like 8 different things that I love to eat, my body only allows me to eat like 2 of them. And that's like probably too much. I really should be eating one of them. So I think for most high income professionals, getting extra guacamole at Chipotle like is meaningless. It really is. Mm-hmm. You might say, well, wait a second, all those decisions collectively matter.
Yeah.
And they do, but it's still nothing. If you look at the difference in like going out to eat constantly versus not, you might be talking about like $3,000 a month for spending on food versus like $1,000 or $1,500 a month spending on food. So yeah, that's $1,000 a month. That's, or $1,500 a month. It's a big deal. But like, okay, so you're, but that's variable expense. So if you needed to slow it down, you could. And like, if your income drops, but you've committed to high fixed expenses on like a big house remodel or a big mortgage or, you know, a big car purchase or something, like you cannot easily undo that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think that, you know, could you budget as a high income professional? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Is it helpful for a lot of people? Definitely. But I would lean towards my own method, which is just being super careful about big fixed expenses that I pick up.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be easier to be wasteful with more dollars if we have more dollars coming in. Like if we're not as intentional, we talk a lot about intentional spending on these episodes. I get what you mean. Like the bigger expenses are less wiggleable, if that's a word.
Sure, we can make it one.
All right. The stock market is too risky for young couples. Left if you disagree, right if you're into it.
I'm going to go left with an asterisk. My asterisk is the U.S. markets have crushed everything else in existence since like 2009, specifically growth, large cap growth and tech. And everybody's just assuming that's going to continue forever, but can't. Because if it did, then like that sector would be like larger than all the world's stock markets combined permanently. And it's just not going to be like that. There's going to be cycles, you know? So I think that what we see a lot of in portfolios is like people are super concentrated in like names and stocks that have done really well. People don't have any international diversification because international stocks have stunk the past 15 years, or they don't have any like additional, I don't know, emerging markets or value stocks, consumer staples, like anything that hasn't like killed it the past 15 years, like people don't have. And anything that's done amazingly well, even like more recently, like crypto since 2022 or whatever, right? Anything that's done well recently, people load up on. And anything that hasn't done well recently, people are underinvested in or don't invest in that much. And that's like my concern, because everybody's like on these investment forums, it's like, all you need is VTXAX and chill, man. It's all you need. Just one fund and done. And it's like, okay, if we had Facebook groups in like the 80s, everybody would be saying, the U.S. is a has-been. Invest only in international stocks. That's all you need. Just invest in Japan. That's the only place worth investing in. So it's just like recency bias. And I don't think people that don't do investing professionally like have that context to understand market cycles and asset classes that outperform versus underperform and just stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not too risky, but I think people have to be eyes wide open about what risks they're actually taking.
Great way to put it. All right. I think I know your answer to this. Taylor Swift or divorced dad rock, such as Creed, Nickelback, Evanescence, Lifehouse.
Wait, that's called divorced dad rock?
Yes.
I'm and so sad. I hope that never happens to me, because I like some of those.
Somebody named like a Spotify list.
That's pretty funny.
It's hilarious. And that's what I listen to at the gym. It really like helps
that's
it work
really
out.
That's really funny. Okay. So you don't have to be a divorced dad to listen to divorced dad
no.
rock. Okay.
Nope. I'm married a woman and I love it.
I mean, I'm going to go T-Swift. Well, it depends on my mood, but like probably overall T-Swift.
Yeah.
But there's some bangers in divorced dad rock that I like.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm like 2 beers in, probably even 1 beer in on karaoke night, I'm probably doing Evanescence, Bring Me to Life.
Perfect. I love it. Fun story. I played the bass all growing up. I had a bass guitar and a stand-up bass for orchestra. But I did a talent show with my best friend, Brittany. What grade was it? 6th grade. And we played Bring Me to Life from Evanescence. She sang and I played the bass. And we got second in the talent show.
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
I knew that was kind of where you were going there. All right. Engagement rings should cost 3 months' salary. Left for nah, or right for yeah.
This is a tough one, actually. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say or left, swipe left. And the reason is I think it should be a conversation. I think mm-hmm. that you can ask a question of a significant other of like, are you the kind of person that likes to be surprised mm-hmm. about big questions like proposals, or do you like some heads up or something, right? Mm-hmm. Make that a hypothetical early enough in your relationship mm-hmm. where you can like take note and they think that nothing's like coming, right? You can even say like, hey, this is nothing's, there's not a loaded question, just out of like hypothetical. If you had a proposal, would you rather like find out about it or be surprised, like know about it or be surprised, like what's better, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that with the ring, anything your significant other will like, and if they really don't like it, they'll tell you, right? So you don't need to be worried about it. And then I think like if you're okay asking those hypotheticals, you might find out certain things are important to your future fiance, they're not that important to you. So I'll give you an example. Like for me, we got like a $600 ring or something like that. And it was just mm-hmm. because diamonds were not really important at all to my wife. And she wanted a big smashing wedding success. And like mm-hmm. that was the priority for her, right? So we got a pearl, small diamonds. It was like Etsy. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. My wedding ring, I lost it after working out at the gym.
Oh, Travis.
And so I have like this titanium one that I like have been wearing from Amazon yeah. since the past 3 years. So mm-hmm. with wedding rings, it's like whatever. Mm-hmm. Do it according to what matters to you.
Yeah, I think that's great. I don't know where 3 months salary came from. There's probably some kind of origin to that, but I think it just do what you guys care about.
De Beers marketing is where that comes from. Literally, it's like, well, how do you know what ring to get? And like the marketing industry is like, let's give them guidelines.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was first, I think it was a month. I think it was a month's salary, then it became two, then it became three. It was like literally just like a Madison Avenue marketing ploy. I think there's a whole history on this if anybody's interested. The big problem with the mining industry is facing right now is they just have all kinds of headwinds, right? Like, I don't know, that's a whole separate podcast, but it's just like competition from lab grown and concerns about conflict diamonds and mm-hmm. you know what I mean, just all kinds of stuff. And it yeah. shows you just, well, a lot of stuff is just what people value it at. If something's highly valuable, people are willing to pay a lot of money for it, then people don't value it anymore, the price of something just goes way down,
right? All right, if you have debt, you shouldn't invest until it's paid off. Left for nah or right for yeah?
Swipe left hard. We have a whole mm-hmm. financial planning company called SLP Wealth that's dedicated to getting people investing way before they paid off their student loans because they shouldn't. So mm-hmm. I'm going to say swipe left hard.
I think that's the easy one. I think everybody listening to this is on that page. There's a healthy balance that we can find. What about dinner date versus fun activity?
Abby, my wife would tell me hard fun activity. So I don't know if that's a swipe direction, but
yeah,
do a fun activity. Because what she says is, if I ever do a dinner date, it's like, oh, so you didn't plan anything? And I'm like, wait, like, hold on, I planned something. It's called a dinner reservation. She's like, that's too easy. Anybody can do a dinner reservation. Where's the creativity, Travis? We should be doing like tennis lessons or archery lessons or like going out to an arcade thing or so, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I do my best.
I figured your answer would be fun activity as well. So that's good that you guys like both like doing fun stuff. You're kind of the kid of the bunch when we have our get togethers with colleagues and stuff. Like you want to do something fun, which I think is yeah. awesome. Entrepreneurship is too risky compared to a stable, high income job. Left for nope or right for yeah, that's right.
I used to be a hard swipe right. Entrepreneurship's way easier, but I'm now a little bit more circumspect. Mm-hmm. I think the reason is in some healthcare fields, it's way less risky to go do your own thing and run your own practice because mm-hmm. it's just way higher probability of success of hitting big financial goals. You're going to make a good amount of money. Outside of a profession specific degree and doing entrepreneurship, I think it's quite risky. Mm-hmm. And when I say quite risky, it's just like, I think a lot of people that want to be entrepreneurs don't have like a good market fit and they don't have a good product or service that they're offering that solves a specific enough problem, right? Mm-hmm. So when somebody like wants to go out and start something, like you kind of need something that solves a problem for somebody, and your addressable market needs to be large enough that you can actually get enough work to live. It can't be so large that like big huge businesses could compete with you and swallow you whole. Mm-hmm. An example would be if you're doing a company that's like in-ground service pool maintenance and installation in a specific geographic area, and that's all you do, you could do really well at that, right? You could have an Instagram following. You could have a really nice website, an easier reservation system, like some Google ads going, and that could be a real successful business. But if you're like trying to compete with big home builders and your niche is like new home construction, and unless you're like super well capitalized and you're great with your business plans and you raise money, probably you'll have a hard time competing against people like that. But if you specialized in only like in-ground Japanese hot tubs or something, I don't know, that's a thing, right? But if like if you're too narrow, your market is too small, you're just not going to be successful because there's just not enough people in that addressable market to be able to operate your business. So I'm going to say that in general, entrepreneurship is the higher likelihood of success than people think, as long as you don't go into it with like this bad market fit. And like give a couple more examples, like in dentistry, bad market fit would be like trying to open yet another dental practice in like the Northern Virginia suburbs. You'll probably be okay, but it's a lot harder to be successful there than it is to be successful in like a moderate area of like moderate competition. You know, it's way easier to be successful in a place with less competition that's not as saturated. You know, if you're doing a vet practice, it's probably way better to open a practice in an area where consumers have the ability to pay for your services instead of like areas where people are very low income. They don't have a lot of discretionary income. They're not going to be able to afford to spend a lot of money on their pets, you know? Just some reflections of things I've seen over the years.
Right. Estate planning is only for the ultra wealthy. Left for nope or right for yes?
Definitely swipe left for no. Sim, my financial planner at SLP Wealth, brought up this idea the other day. There are states where if you don't have a guardian named in your will for your children, the state can like temporarily put them in foster care. And
that's not a good thought.
Which is not a good thought at all. It's kind of terrifying, honestly. And you know, that might be only a handful of states and it might never happen. Like maybe if anybody submits a petition in time or something after death, you could get it reversed or something. I mean, I'm thinking about something traumatic happening where, you know, my kids lose both of us and like they don't go to the grandparents, they go to like some stranger's place for like a week or something. That'd be really terrible, right? So I think that estate planning is that kind of thing. Nobody talks about it. It's always other things we can think about, particularly for young people, because we're just not thinking about our own mortality, right? So at least get something in place. Like there's a lot of options now, like trustedandwill.com. There's other ones that you can go to and at least get a basic for a few $100 plan in place that at least shows something in case something happens to you so you don't put your family in at risk.
Yep, I would agree. Love Actually versus Crazy Stupid Love. Which one are you swiping right on?
This is embarrassing. I know Love Actually.
Have you never seen Crazy Stupid Love?
Well, there's the Love Actually is the posters one, right? Is that one? That's all I know about that. And then Crazy Stupid Love is, what is that about?
Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling is in it, Emma Stone. You haven't seen that one?
Oh, that sounds very familiar.
It's really good.
I'm probably going to go with Steve Carell over Hugh Grant, I think. So I'll probably go with that one on the right.
That's a great watch. It's probably free somewhere. You should go watch it this weekend. I cry every time at the end because it's hilarious, but it's also like really heartwarming. Let's see. A prenup means divorce. Left or no?
This is more controversial. I would say definitely no, because prenups can be, I mean, but it's interesting to see people react to marriage in a lot more like what you would call like economically rational ways. And it is interesting to think about it, right? Like a couple examples. There's a lot of tech founders and professional athletes and people like that that wait to get their big payday and then they get married, right? And it's like, well, why does that happen? Probably a lot of those people are doing that so that, you know, in that case, you might not even need a prenup because the contract like already exists. Like you're already making that amount of money, right? So you can't argue in a divorce court, well, they just started making all this money like when we got married, you know, and therefore the divorcing spouse will be entitled to part of it. I think about this a lot because I'm a fan of Taylor Swift. I think almost surely Travis Kelce is going to be asked to sign a prenup, particularly with the way he performed in the Super Bowl against my Philadelphia Eagles. Sorry, is that like ridiculous?
She'll still marry him.
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, it might not be a yes now. I mean, shoot. I mean, she's gonna have so much leverage in that prenup negotiation. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think this is one of those things where be true to your values, be true to yourself, be true to what you think is right. Marriage is a big risk no matter what prenup exists or not. It's absolutely true that without a prenup, it's a lot riskier. But at the same time, I think this is just a real personal conversation. I don't think that anybody should be listening to me as to whether or not you should get one or not. If you think that it's, you know, something that you want to bring up, you could. I think that there's also ways that you can strategically do things with your assets in a way that maybe you don't need one as much. So an example is maybe before getting married, if you have any fears or concerns, maybe you talk to like an estate attorney or something and look at putting your business ownership in a trust or something like that. Or maybe you look at LLC being formed prior to marriage or whatever, just to protect your assets. If you get an inheritance, maybe you keep it in an individual account instead of merging it with a joint account where your spouse would be entitled to half of it. I don't know. But I mean, I'm a little bit of a hypocrite here because, you know, I mean, I don't have one. I hope my wife never leaves me, but it could happen. Like, you know, it could happen to anybody. And so I think that you just have to be willing to take what, you know, what is your risk tolerance? I think that's a big question mark, right? And investing, if you're high risk tolerance, you can move forward with 100% stock allocation, maybe. If you are low risk tolerance, you're a little more conservative. Same thing with marriage. I bet a lot more people probably get prenups with second marriages instead of first marriages too. I do think you have to be able to have the conversation, but I think it needs to be a conversation about like that's sensitive to the feelings of you and your future spouse. Like, hey, my lawyer wants me to get one. What do you feel about prenup? How does that make you feel? Like, it's never romantic to talk about it, but like, is that something that really hurts you? Or is it something that you feel like it's reasonable? I'm just wanted to understand how you feel. You know, I think asking questions is always the best way to approach sensitive topics in love.
Yeah. Questions are good. I look at it as like an insurance policy too. It's not insurance, yeah, but you can think about it as insurance. And we kind of joke on talking about insurance on this podcast about like, you hope you don't ever need to use your insurance because that means something catastrophic happened. And that's kind of what a prenup is. Like something catastrophic happened, the marriage ended. And with a prenup, there's just more defined ways of that marriage dissolving than maybe the state would say that marriage could dissolve or like your titling of assets. You know, it's just a little bit
more. I do think about this a lot, honestly, though. The people that do push hard for prenups or postnups, like a lot of times, I guess, I kind of wonder, is that the life that I would want to model myself after?
Mm-hmm.
Example is Elon Musk. Like he actually got his first wife to sign a postnup. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
He literally
after
was
getting married, yeah.
After getting married, he like blamed it on his quote unquote VC partners. Oh, well, you know, they're not going to invest any more money in PayPal unless you sign this postnup that says you're not entitled to half the company or whatever. So we have to sign this postnup so that we can still raise money in the company and it still guarantees you a huge payout if something ever goes south. And like, what happened? Like mm-hmm. she signs it and then like several years later, you know, divorces her. I want to say she got this. I'm making this number up a little bit, but she got $40 million or something like that. And she has four or five kids by him. Think about that. $40 million or whatever. And the guy's worth $400 billion today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and like Mackenzie Bezos got like, what, $75 billion or something like that. Huge difference.
They're tricky for sure.
And maybe that's an argument for what I said, which is just do it if you want to, because is Bezos still super rich post prenup, like without a prenup? Yeah. Like is Elon rich with one? Sure. I think that the biggest fears people have is like, what if it's not like you just drifted apart? What if it's like somebody like betrays you, right? And like mm-hmm. you also have to lose half your assets when somebody betrayed you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's hard, but I don't think that
it is hard. Yeah.
I guess where I land on it is sort of like, I don't want to be protecting myself from everything in life.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that, but at some point it's just take a risk. And if the risk doesn't work out, like that stinks, maybe you learn from next time.
Yeah.
Like insurance policies, like how many insurance policies do I have in my home? There's a lot of riders that I probably need to add or should think about adding, but it's like, where does it stop? You know,
mm-hmm. That's fair. I have a couple of folks in mind, but I would love to get a family law attorney on here soon to chat about some of these document questions, like the prenup question. I think it would be really cool to have somebody who's like in it every day, their perspective. So stay tuned. That'll be soon. Okay, a couple more, then we'll move on to some green flags and some red flags with people in finance and money and relationships. Keeping on to the tune of marriage, you should combine your finances immediately after marriage. Kind of a funny one to throw after prenup conversations, but do you think we should combine finances immediately after marriage?
I'm going to swipe right on this. Maybe I'm like a little old school, right? But my kind of theory is if you don't trust someone enough to combine finances, or if there's concerns why you wouldn't combine finances with somebody, then that's like, are you sure you should be marrying them? Because I mean, nowadays people have long-term partnerships without being married. The marriage is a little bit separate from partnership sometimes. And so that's probably an old-fashioned view. I mean, my view to a client though would be just, I always try to come back to, my values don't really matter. Like, you're the person that we're talking about. Like, your values are the values that we need to make sure that we make the plan for. So like, I would just say like, what do you want? And then I would just ask a lot of questions about why do you feel that way? And there could be a lot of experiences where maybe their dad was terrible with finances and gambled away the, you know, the family budget. That's why they want to be protected from that. Well, maybe that's like a lot deeper conversation about what values and feelings and experiences are we bringing into marriage? And like, do you want that trauma to be carried forward? Or do you want to like talk about it? Maybe get some therapy to discuss the pain that that caused you and maybe end that cycle of bringing that pain forward, you know? But maybe the answer is separate things are good. I don't know. Like, my wife has a separate account. She calls it her, what if Travis is a scumbag account or something like that. And she jokes that she keeps like five figures in there in case she ever needs to flee to Mexico because I'm like crazy or so. I don't know.
Oh my
gosh. But the funny thing is the account hasn't changed in the entire time we've been married. She hasn't put any money into it. And like, what's the point of this account?
You haven't given her a cause for concern. So she's standing
well,
by.
it's supposed to be like kind of a slush fund that she can use on whatever thing she wants. But it's like we already spend all of our money on whatever we want anyway. So,
and that's an example of how like money changes as you go through a relationship, as your relationship matures with somebody, or just your relationship with money. Like, your relationship in general can change over time, and things that used to feel important and, you know, very either a pain point or very specific to you, maybe they're not so much of a big deal anymore, or maybe the thought process is different now.
Well, and tolerate your partner's eccentricities as long as it's not a deal breaker. Like, for me, it's like, I know I'm really eccentric in a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Christine tolerates that about me. And so it's like, okay, if she wants to have some random account and it's never growing and it just sort of sits there at 0% interest, I try to prod her sometimes like, hey, you probably should put that in like a money market account. But she's like, but then it's not accessible immediately. Like, if I need it that hour, then it's harder to touch it. And it's like, well, okay, it's been like 8 years or 7 years, you know, it's still sitting there. Like, you know, whatever you think.
Yeah. All right. Last one. And then we'll move on to red and green flags. And I've got a last little thing that we'll wrap up with. But do you prefer a wine and cheese night or a pizza and beer night? What's your ideal cozy Valentine's Day date?
Well, this is kind of an interesting. So I actually haven't had any alcohol since New Year's.
Great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats.
And I get asked like if I'm in the program a lot when I like bring it up. I love smorgasbord kind of stuff. I'm like, variety is the spice of life kind of guy. So I would love a platter of like a lot of variety of things that I get to kind of nibble at or sample. So I like that. I like kombucha. I like non-alcoholic beer a lot.
Have you tried non-alcoholic wine? Because they do have that too.
I haven't.
Yeah.
I do love wine and beer. And I think my concern about it is I'm in my mid/late 30s, depending on how you define it now. Calories are no joke. And like, if you look at the data on how long it takes you to, and this is going to be, we're going to have some angry responses after I say this, but if you look at the time it takes you on the treadmill to burn off small amounts of things when you're older, it's like a lot. So I don't know. I think that I'm going to come to a balanced, peaceful way of thinking about this one day. But the hard part is when you're a parent with young kids, you're tired all the time. I think it's really easy to slip into the, oh, I'm just having a couple beers, you know, after a long, hard day. And it's like, adds a bunch of calories and also kind of like becomes a little bit, at least for me, it was becoming a little bit of a crutch.
Yeah.
You know, having like a wine or a couple beers. And I don't know, I just didn't want to develop that habit. So I thought, well, let me prove to myself that I can break that habit. And if I break it for a long period of time, then maybe that shows I have sufficient control to like imbibe again more once more. I don't know.
Yeah. Or a bit more sparingly or something. That's great, though. I know a lot of people have goals to drink less. I think there's more and more research that shows that it's really actually not great for you.
I'm actually quite aware of that research because I'm like concerned about it, because I have a lot of very close loved ones in my family that have died prematurely because of Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like, and I've also had several concussions because I'm really stubborn. Just ask my wife, you know, random concussions like falling off a railing thing at a water park when I was a kid, and like
getting
a concussion in flag football because the quarterback moved and, you know, we went head to head, like trying to grab this flag. And so it's like, okay, well, if I drink a moderate amount, if I'm able to replace that feeling as much as possible with like alternatives that maybe potentially give me lower risk, maybe I try that. I don't know. I mean, what a long answer to something that didn't need to be a long answer.
So I'm going to say charcuterie versus pizza. You prefer charcuterie is what it sounds like, because you like options.
And I'll say wine versus beer, because I do like wine more than beer.
Yeah, nice. Cool. I love these conversations with you because we get some insight into your world for a little bit and how your brain works. All right. Some red flags, I would say. I'm just going to kind of list some of these out. We see a lot when it comes to working with clients and their money. We see a lot of behaviors within relationships, especially when it comes to money. And there are generally some red flags that you should look out for or that should be discussed with your partner if they come up. But one of those red flags would be hiding debt from your partner. I think hiding debt is a symptom of either you being ashamed of it, embarrassed of it. It was something that you already talked about and you did anyways. You know, that's something that would be a red flag to us as a planner as well. Is what is the word? We need transparency in relationships when it comes to money. Keeps that trust alive as well. Red flag one could be that one person controls all of the financial decisions. Not necessarily that one manages it all, because I think there in a lot of relationships, there is one person who generally does more of the financial stuff in the household. Like, who is that between y'all? I think that's you.
I definitely manage all the finances, but it's more because my wife really doesn't care.
And that's similar to a lot of couples.
And that's one thing that attracted me, frankly, to her, is because I never met somebody that cares less about money than my wife. And that's good, because I felt like it balanced me out, because I felt like a lot of times I would be myopically focusing on things like net worth goals or, you know, growth of whatever investments, right? And then my wife like slammed the brakes on that. And she's like, how generous are you? Are you giving like 10% of your income actually? Or, oh, you're just giving 2? Oh, you're a little hypocrite, you know, you sinner, you know, I'm just joking around a little bit, but like, but it was good because it like we balance each other, right? Like, I think I push her a lot harder to be a lot more planning for the future, saving, investing, you know, more for specific goals. She pushes me to say, well, what's the use of the money? What's the point of it? What is the value of having it if you're not going to be using it to achieve certain goals, save for the family, be generous?
Well, and that kind of goes into, I think, another red flag that we can quickly turn into a green flag is no discussion about financial goals between partners. I think having not just financial goals too, but life goals, you want to know, like, where are you guys going together as a couple, life-wise, you know, family-wise, and then financially, like, how are we going to get there? So I think a lot of times we do talk to folks about their goals together in their first couple planning meetings. And sometimes it's the first time they're verbalizing these goals. They might internally know that they have them, but they're verbalizing those goals for the first time. And then partners are kind of shaping those up together, thinking about things together versus more independently. So I think not discussing financial goals kind of is a red flag to me if no one's ever had financial discussions in a relationship, but it can quickly turn into a green flag with having this.
We like to joke on this pod, but there's like extreme value added if your financial planner is able to lower stress on your marriage or relationship.
Yeah.
I'll just give an example. Like with my SLP wealth planner, Sim, we were in a meeting, my wife and I, talking about goals. It was really awkward. And I'm just going to be vulnerable here because my wife has this very strong goal of having an apartment or pied a terre in Paris one day. And this is a goal that like, I really don't want. I really don't want it. And it's a lot of it is driven in like my own fears and worries and desire to be close to aging parents and family and stuff. And, you know, the idea of like relocating my whole life to a foreign country when my biggest thing is family, friends. And it was like awkward because here my planner is sitting there and like my wife and I are having this conversation that could easily turn into like a conflict conversation, you know, about goals that don't match. But instead, it's a neutral third party sitting there, and it's almost like advanced couples counseling if you have a good financial planner. Because it's like two people are sitting there that love each other that have a conversation with this neutral third party, and both people have to be heard. Both people's views have to be heard. And what you do is, like any marriage, you figure out compromise. So the planner's job is to kind of help make sure that both of you are listened to and talk through the things that matter to you. And then the resolution that we came to is, okay, like, it's okay to pay a fee to an agency that helps expats find apartments so that we can like look at them and look at options and go on a trip specifically for that. So that's like a step along the way of closer to buying one, but it's also not putting it down a huge amount of money where we're like fully committed. And that was something that we were both okay with and both felt really at peace with. It's just an example. I mean, people think about like financial planning is, oh, I don't need that. I'm DIY or I'm good. Well, unless you and your spouse are clones of each other and you both are really into finances and you both have the exact same goals and you both have the same feelings about money and spending, like if there's anything that doesn't align there, like you're setting yourself up for potential unnecessary conflict in your relationship. Mm-hmm. And if somebody doesn't have the money to hire a planner, yeah, that's one thing. But if you do have the money to hire a planner, like people think about like the risk of the markets going down, that's like, you know, maybe a temporary risk, but like splitting up literally does wipe away half your net worth.
It could be permanent. Yeah.
And money is the number one reason for divorce. Mm-hmm. Why is money the number one reason for divorce? Well, it's because besides like adultery, right? It's kind of like some of the biggest ways you can make somebody feel betrayed. Mm-hmm. Hey, my spouse is out here gambling away our money on FanDuel and, you know, oops, that's a joke, FanDuel. Hopefully they don't sue us, but you know what I mean? And you should have been saving for a kid's college.
Yeah.
Or, hey, there's a secret spending addiction that you have to Amazon and like you're hiding it, you know? Mm-hmm. Or that there's opportunity constantly for money stuff to come up and people, and it just causes fights because it's a trigger. Maybe there's like something in your past, right? Where your mm-hmm. parents were bad with money or your mom or dad was bad with money. And like that triggers you every time it comes up in your marriage. And so then you have like a fight and lose a whole evening that could have been wine and charcuterie. And instead it's just two people going at each other that love each other, but mm-hmm. it's just a wasted evening. Most people would greatly benefit, even people who feel like they've got it under control. It's like the emotional, relational interactions that make it a high yield investment to do financial planning in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Very beautiful. And I think that touches on a lot of the green flags I was going to say, you know, open conversations about money values, setting joint and individual goals, financial goals. You know, I think a green flag would be having a money date with your spouse every month or every so often to just check in on things. Supporting each other's career and their own investment goals and really aligning on those major financial decisions and feelings, you know, before marriage.
Can I say something about money dates real quick, sure. though?
I know, like, you probably don't like them.
money dates to my wife sound like nails on a chalkboard.
Right.
Because it's like, I care about my NIH grant. I care about my kids. I care mm-hmm. about making sure that I'm not in the hole financially and racking up a bunch of credit card debt, but like, stop talking about investments. I don't care. Sure, like index funds, I get it. Like, move on. Why haven't you done the dishes? Why haven't you fixed this problem and this hole in the ceiling? Why haven't you contacted the contractor that still hasn't fixed our AC system? You know what I mean? When you aren't paying attention to what your spouse prioritizes, like, it can create conflicts.
Yeah.
The regular conversations that we get to have with our SLP wealth planner, it's like, that takes the pressure off me.
Yeah, it is a money date. It's a money date with a third party.
It is a money date, but I don't have to call it that. I don't have to schedule that.
Yeah.
I can be like, hey, I know this is not fun, but like, by the way, we have to talk to our financial planner at 6 p.m. on Monday.
Yeah.
And it's usually like, oh, fine. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about money, but like, Sim's pretty cool. So sure, you know?
Yeah, I know Christine likes Sim. Sim's great.
I was talking to one of my friends. I tried to give my wife updates. He was saying, this is a friend of mine, and he's like, and it just ended in a really unpleasant evening. And I was like, why? And he's like, I kept talking about the returns we've gotten in our different real estate investments. And she was just really frustrated with me. And I was like, did you ever ask if that was important to her? He's like, no. And I was like, well, that's, you know, that's probably the mistake there. What might matter to her financially is like, well, how much are you giving? You know, what are you putting away for the kids' college? Are you on track for the vacation you want to take together at the end of the year? You know? Mm-hmm. people, again, deserve to be heard about what do they care about,
yeah,
about money. And there's not a right or wrong answer about that.
Mm-hmm. That's very fair. Cool. We're going to wrap things up. I think we love talking about love and money because we thought this was going to be a shorter episode, but we're talking quite a bit about love and money. So lightning round for the very end. You ready?
Uh-oh.
You can only say yes or no.
Yeah, let's do it.
No context. Yes or no. May or may not be a hot take, but just what your opinion is. Not necessarily what everyone should do, but like, how would you react to each of these things? All right. So yes or no. Splitting the bill on the first date. Yes or no?
No.
Merging bank accounts after marriage. We talked a little bit about this.
Do it.
Going into debt for a dream wedding.
No.
Buying a house together before marriage.
I mean, no.
Dang it. I'm on your naughty list because me and Kelly did that for sure.
Well, you said this is what I would do, right?
I know. I'm giving you a hard time.
I just want people to be super clear. What I do doesn't matter.
Right.
Like the person listening, your answer is the right answer. These yes, are just answers.
Exactly.
And most of my reasons are more like, based off of, I don't know, like I'll give you an example, like not splitting the bill on the first date. Like mm-hmm. I was extremely cheap to people on a first date. Like back when it was all about me and all about my savings rate.
Yeah.
I made dates split Chipotle burrito bowls and I took the dates to like Wendy's on a first date. And like, it's kind of embarrassing now. My first date with my wife, I literally took her to Chipotle and I was like, hey, watch this. And I was like, can I have double rice and double beans and two tortillas on the side? And then I literally made her a burrito and made me a burrito. And I was like, look, isn't this cool? I paid for one meal, but I got two meals out of it. Here you go. And
she was sitting hot to her.
Shell shocked. No, I think she was just like, oh my gosh, at least this guy's 6'2". She says my best attribute is just the fact that
that's pretty funny.
Tall. So I don't know. So these are my answers, the listeners' answers, your answers listening are the ones that matter. I just want to be clear about that.
That's a great way to end it. And yeah, I wanted to leave this for last because it's just kind of fun to see how other people think, and how you respond is probably going to be different to how I respond for a number of different reasons. And we're both probably right with how we're proceeding with, you know, answering that question for our own reasons. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for entertaining me. Thanks for allowing me to surprise
and
you.
And I didn't get to share, like, I'm not in favor of people buying a house after they're married either. So I didn't get to, yeah, I'm just kidding. This is me saying this with like a hole in my ceiling after all these problems of 2 years worth of terrible renovation stories. But, you know.
Yeah. You're scarred right now. You're hurt when it comes to buying a house.
I will say this. If you listen to this and you think about showing yourself some love, doing something loving to your spouse or significant other about just making sure that your goals are put forward front and center and the conflict is lower and that you have a trusted helper on your path to whatever it is you want to be at. We still do have some discounts for financial planning. If you go to slpwealth.com/book, you'll get the cheapest pricing for having your own personal planner to lessen conflict and the risk of conflict in your relationship. You know, I think that that's a really good investment. One of the best you can make.
Love it. Well, thank you for listening. If you made it this long, and I hope you have a lovely Valentine's Day evening and good weekend as well. We'll catch you on the next one.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation, 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.